why are there so few Christians if Jesus is as wonderful as he is? That is the question running through the chapter of the Bible we are looking at this spring, Matthew chapter 13. So far in the chapter, we've had two answers. Answer number one came from the parable of the sower. Why are there so few Christians? Because not everyone responds to Jesus in the right way. For some, the message doesn't go in at all. Others are distracted or give up when life gets tough. Then we had another parable, the field with weeds and wheat in it. We heard that parable explained at the end of this morning's reading, and it gives us answer number two. Why are there so few Christians? Because we are assessing the situation too early. God the farmer has delayed the harvest so that there can be more wheat. The world looks full of weeds at the moment. Just turn on the news. There is a wheat shortage. Come back in hundreds or thousands of years, and there will be much more wheat. Many more Christians. Today we're going to build some more onto that second answer. The answer that says there are too few Christians because we are looking at things too early on in history. And we're going to build on that answer by looking at two more short parables. But before we get to that, let me just explain how we're going to cover the ground in our Bible reading, because it was a fairly long reading. And we're not going to look at all at the end of the passage from verse 36 onwards. That is Jesus explaining the parable that we looked at last time. We're also not going to look in detail at verses 34 and 35. They are two great little verses that simply say Jesus is doing nothing new. Verse 35 invites us to look at the Old Testament, Psalm 78. Look at other times when God has acted to bless his people. It has always been the case that God has been rejected by the very people he came for. Now, the exact way that Psalm 78 makes that point gets a little involved to explain, and I don't want us to get distracted from the two short parables at the beginning of our reading. So, you might think I'm cheating with this great long reading. We're going to skip over verses 34 and 35. We're going to skip over verses 36 to the end and just focus on three verses. The two parables in verses 31 to 33, parable of the mustard seed, and the parable of the yeast. Each of those two parables is making the same three points. So let me read again those two parables, and then I will draw out the three points that Jesus is making. He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. Though it is the smallest of all seeds, yet when it grows, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds come and perch in its branches. He told them still another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast that a woman took and mixed into about 30 kilograms of flour until it worked all through the dough. Three points. Firstly, Jesus' kingdom starts small. Jesus' kingdom starts small. Small mustard seed. I could have brought one in today, visual aid. But you wouldn't have been able to see it, so there would be little point. Except that's exactly the point. If you eat whole grain mustard, as I hope you do, or if you cook Indian food that starts with whole dried mustard seeds, as I hope you do, you know how small an individual mustard seed is. It's about the same size as the small black seeds you get in naan bread. Those actually are onion seeds. Tiny. Small amount of yeast. Now, in those days, they didn't have sachets of dried yeast, 7 grams wrapped in foil. They would have used a sourdough culture. You'd start with a tiny batch of dough that is alive with yeast. You work it into a much larger quantity of flour. But before you bake it, you take a bit out, and that will be your culture for the next batch. Perhaps you've done this, maybe with friends, where you have a group of you and you pass on your seed dough to the next person. So you're all making your bread or your cake out of the same little batch of starter. In both cases, Jesus deliberately picks something small to begin with. Jesus' kingdom starts small. Second, Jesus' kingdom will one day be enormous. Jesus' kingdom will one day be enormous. Verse 32, it is the largest of garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds come and perch in its branches. The garden he's talking about here is a vegetable garden. He's probably talking about a variety of mustard called the black mustard, which could grow to about 4 foot in height. So it's not the largest tree in the world, but Jesus' point still stands. If you have one of those on your allotment, it would dwarf your cabbages. That's what he's saying. Now, why didn't Jesus pick a bigger tree? The Californian redwood, for example. I'll come back to that. But it's still sizable, big enough for the birds to come and perch in its branches, or the squirrels. If you're taking notes, this is almost certainly a reference back to Daniel chapter 4, verses 12 and 21. The birds represent the nations of the world. One day, Jesus' kingdom will be so big that whole nations can perch in a tiny bit of it, take shelter in the enormous kingdom of Jesus Christ. Jesus' kingdom will be so big and so vast that the United States of America or China will just be like a little bird in the branches by comparison. Jesus' kingdom, much bigger than the nations of the world and a place of shelter for them. Then there's the yeast. That was worked into about 30 kilograms of flour. That is a whopping amount of dough. That small little starter made lunch for 300 or 400 people. Jesus' kingdom will one day be enormous. And then third point. We're talking about the same kingdom. We're talking about the same kingdom. The kingdom that is small to begin with, the kingdom that will be massive eventually, are one and the same. Now that may seem obvious, but the point is this. It's not that something small will one day be replaced by something big. It's that something small will one day grow into something big. It's the same kingdom. This is probably why Jesus picked the mustard seed. If he had wanted a bigger tree, he could have found one. But that bigger tree would probably start from a much bigger seed, like a pine cone. Jesus needs a tree that is a decent size, but that also comes from a seed that was fabled for being so tiny. He needed an example of something tiny growing into something big, not just an example of something big. Now, this third point is actually the really important one, so let me illustrate. Suppose you catch the bus to work, as I used to, starting 2 stops after the start of the route of the double-decker 281 bus. Now along comes a minibus. It would also get you to work, but it's near the end of its route, so every seat is taken. You don't get on the small bus because you know that a much bigger, more impressive, more roomy double-decker will be along in a minute. You don't get on the small bus, you wait for the big bus. If Jesus' kingdom was small and would soon be replaced by something bigger, you wouldn't get on board his kingdom. You would wait for the bigger replacement. But The small and the big were talking about the same kingdom. A little boy called Jack only had one cow. One day he took it to the market to sell. His family needed the money to buy food. His mother didn't know how much money the cow would fetch, but Jack had to get a good deal. The cow had to raise as much money as possible. It was the last source of income that they had. On his way to market, he met a man who bought the cow in exchange for a small handful of beans. The man said they were magic beans. Jack had no idea what that meant, but it sounded good, so he took the beans. His mother was furious. He had taken off their prize cow, their most valuable possession, and come back with a handful of beans? Well, you know what happened next. If you don't, search the internet for Jack and magic beans. Jack planted those beans, and they grew into something enormous, and to cut a long story short, the family's fortune was made. I often wished the parable of Jack and the beanstalk was in the Bible. It isn't. In fact, Jesus told parables that specifically speak of the long wait between sowing his word and seeing the harvest, whereas Jack's plant grew up literally overnight. But these two parables do give us a bit of Jack and the beanstalk. It was those same small beans that his mother scorned that became that huge beanstalk, which meant that Jack was right, as it turned out, to invest in those beans, small though they were. Two simple parables making 3 points. Jesus' kingdom starts small. Jesus' kingdom will one day be enormous. We're talking about the same kingdom. Well, let's apply this to today before we close. We almost don't need to do this because I hope the relevance for today is now obvious. But let me draw a couple of things out. First, don't let the smallness of the kingdom put you off committing. Maybe you're here this morning, not yet a Christian. Maybe you are convinced that Jesus is the one to follow, but you're holding off committing fully to him. And maybe one of the lingering doubts in your mind is that Jesus' kingdom, the Christian church, is such a small affair. Don't be put off committing because of the smallness of the kingdom. What is small now will one day fill the whole world. It will one day be enormous. Don't stand at the bus stop waiting for a bigger bus to come along. The bus before you will be the biggest. The horse before you will be the fastest. The prize you are being offered is the best. And if it looks small, it's only because you're looking now before the end. And second, don't let the smallness of the kingdom put you off sharing. Don't let the smallness of the kingdom put you off sharing. We've talked about this in recent weeks. If so few people seem to decide that Jesus is worth following, it can put you off sharing Jesus with your friends and your neighbours. There's a nagging doubt that you might have been had. Again, don't let the smallness of the kingdom put you off sharing. One friend of mine was interviewed on the radio recently about his Christian views on some issue. The interviewer said to him, "Some people would say that you are on the wrong side of history. What would you say to that?" Now, his reply was the brilliant soundbite that was what was needed on radio in that particular context. But the answer from this passage is that Jesus and his kingdom are most definitely not on the wrong side of history. History still has quite a bit to run. But let it run, and it will be quite clear that those of us who have put all of our eggs into Jesus' basket are on the right side of history. Things may look small today, but that same small kingdom will one day be enormous. So don't put off committing, and don't be put off sharing.